Yeah, so we'll open it up for questions.
I'll kick it off. I know you've addressed this a little bit, what's going to happen to Symbian, but, you know, over the next, several months, why would anybody continue to buy Symbian at all, knowing that it's pretty much going to be obsolete?
No, it's a good question. First of all, customers all over the world are buying Symbian because at the price points and in the environments in which they're making those purchase decisions, they're a great value and they meet their needs. And that doesn't change overnight because someone says, hey, over the months and years ahead, there's something else happening. I mean, it's not really the way the industry works. I mean, we are, in the environment of, immediate this, that, we new mobile device every month, all that type of thing. It's quite different in vast parts of the world. We sold 28.5 million Symbian devices last quarter, 28.5 million, with the largest number of those in countries like China and India and other places.
Those are at the low end.
Well, a number of them at the low end, but at the same time, the N8, for someone who values, for example, photography, there's nothing on the market that comes close to the quality of that camera, as one example. And so that combined with the fact that we are already showing that we, on a routine basis are updating the experience and providing improvements. We've shown some of those here just in the last day or so where we've shown some of the potential improvements to the Symbian user experience. We've talked about new devices that will be entering the market, new processor capabilities, gigahertz plus multi-core process. I mean, there's work that we will continue to really do while we manage through that transition. As well, we'll be investing effort to make sure that a Symbian user has some form of path forward in terms of Windows Phone. So if they're worried about data transfer and things like that, we'll be clearly making sure
right.
that's a nice experience.
I understand at the low end, but at the higher end, in your smartphone category, I know it hasn't been a big presence in the U.S., but certainly
yep.
in other parts of the world, you've been able to sell those phones.
We have.
Do you think people will just stop sort of buying them?
No. No, I don't. Because when you go into a store and listen to the conversation, the conversation is about, what's the quality of this hardware? Is it a familiar user experience? Is it a trusted brand? We're the number one brand in China. The number one brand, like beyond Coca-Cola, beyond local brands or anything like that. And all of that matters a great deal, in the purchase decision. And so, we believe we'll be selling quite a number of additional Symbian phones. But of course, the question you ask highlights a principal concern is we have to do a good job of managing that transition.
Nokia has always been an integrated platform provider. And there are kind of two kinds of mobile companies. There are integrated platform providers like Apple and RIM and Nokia. And then there's OEMs like Samsung and HTC. We've never seen an integrated platform provider transition to being an OEM. Do you feel that Nokia is at all behind companies with a lot of experience as OEMs working with third-party software, first of all? And second of all, are you worried at all about Nokia losing control of its destiny, now being dependent on another company for its smartphone future?
So in terms of how we feel about that, clearly what we're doing with Microsoft is neither all the way in one direction or the other. I mean, we're not transitioning into being a strict OEM company. The relationship we have struck with Microsoft is unique. It's unique in terms of the joint assets we're contributing, hardware, software, services, building an ecosystem together. So we've created an environment where we've placed a big bet on them and they have placed a big bet on us. And that mutual dependency creates for us a balance that we believe will result in a hugely positive user experience delivered jointly between the companies. This is different than they have a version of software that shows up, on the internet, every so often, and we just drop it on our devices. We are going to be involved in every step of the development process and working with them in the definition of that as it goes forward, of contributing to it and doing things on a unique basis within the context of their operating platform. So this is quite a bit different than the traditional OEM model, but yet at the same time, to your opening comments, this is a shift for Nokia. This is a shift in terms of the elements over which we do or don't have absolute control, because clearly we're partnering with Microsoft.
If going to the transfer, you moving from Microsoft to Nokia, was there any ever talk about conflict of interest like, I don't know when the talk started, but the operating system has been public for about 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine hiring a new CEO, you know, takes less time than that. So is there any...
So what we did within Nokia is, as we went through the process of evaluating the different options, which is essentially the Symbian and Mego going forward is the first option, Android is the second, and Microsoft is the third. We made sure that we had the whole executive team involved in that process. When it came down to the time for the executive team to make a recommendation to the board of directors as to what we thought should happen, the executive team was unanimous on that in terms, after having gone through months of work, negotiations, looking at all of the details, assessing our internal elements, where we had our own problems, all of that. The decision was unanimous. The management team as a whole presented it to the board of directors. The board of directors had an opportunity to interact with all of the members of the management team, not just taking it through me or whatever. And then the board of directors made the final decision, Thursday night, in fact, before we went public on Friday. And so the board of directors, obviously, you know, representing the shareholders and representing a diverse array of backgrounds, they had to make sure that all of the checks and balances and everything were done. And clearly they were satisfied with it. The final decision was made Thursday night, going into Friday. Now, huge amount of work leading up to that, different options in play and everything, but the decision was made. I immediately began to call certain partners who needed to know what the final decision was.
So, I mean, you didn't have, like, Andy Rubin on standby to fly over to London. I mean, it seems
so
kind of, Steve Ballmer was there.
Out of respect for the confidentiality we have with Google, I can't comment on that. You know, I think they were getting a sense. You might have noticed the tweet bomb a few days earlier.
Yeah. Two right? Turkeys.
Yeah, so they dropped a tweet bomb. So I suspect that might have been correlated with a point when they had a sense that they were not in the winning seat.
Absolutely be no QT for Windows Phone.
Yep, yep.
Symbian developers right now feel that they've been set adrift, they have no transition and no glide path to the new Nokia platform. Mm-hmm. What are you offering your existing developers to help them come with you?
Yeah, so first of all, it's the case that in the area of Symbian, the devices that are Qt enabled out in the market today, a quarter of a billion devices in the months and years ahead on which they can deliver applications, earn money, and so forth. So that's part of it. As we ship our first Mego device, and whatever comes after that in terms of future disruption, the first Mego device will be Qt enabled as well. There's two questions, you're correct, that get asked a lot. The first is, okay, the vast amount of volume of phones from Nokia are actually not in the smartphone segment. That was 28.5 million phones last quarter. But there were 100, and I think I've got this number right, about 120 million phones shipped by us in totality. And the question is, when we talk about the second part of our strategy being renewed innovation across mobile phones, the question is, are you putting Qt down there and therefore delivering very substantial volumes into that environment? And all we're able to say today is that we have not made that decision. I'm just going to park that thought right there. The other part of this relates to Qt on Windows Phone, and it's correct. Both Nokia and Microsoft agree that Qt should not be on Windows Phone. Here's why. If we create an alternative development platform on Windows Phone, we risk creating an environment where you have different developers developing on different development platforms on the same device, which is architecturally possible, but creates all sorts of challenges in terms of, okay, so between Microsoft and Nokia, we're going to spend a ton of money attracting developers. Are we going to put different developers on different platforms essentially in competition with each other? Are we going to divide our marketing efforts with us saying, like at this show, go Qt on Windows Phone, and Microsoft saying, go Silverlight on Windows Phone? And end up in a situation where we're forking from a messaging perspective and a mindshare perspective. So we thought that clarity was essential. The other thing is that if Qt would not be the primary development platform on Windows Phone, which clearly it would not be, then with every release of Windows Phone, would it be the case that Nokia would have... The question you would be asking me is, okay, great, you've got Qt on Windows Phone, but isn't it the case that anything on top of Windows Phone is going to be one step behind Windows Phone itself, and therefore, haven't you put all the developers at a disadvantage? That's the question you would be asking. And of course, technically, you'd probably be roughly true in asking that question. So we've got to be sensitive to that as well. We came down on the side of clarity, single development platform, away we go. An overarching strategy point when you think about the big chess pieces on the table. Even if a company today is making all sorts of money with Android, it's very well understood that the risk of commoditization around Android is very high. As that commoditization sets in, margins will come under increasing pressure. The reason that someone would join the Windows Phone ecosystem is, first of all, because they believe they can deliver a great and differentiated experience on it for the consumers, but they're also going to take a look at the economics. And if because of or within the third ecosystem there are margins available that get reduced on the Android side, then people will make a decision to participate in that.
It seems like the risk of commoditization is still the same. I mean, if you're all hardware vendors, you're using somebody else's software, everybody else's
Yeah.
But, I mean, isn't the risk the same? Is it that you feel again?
No, if we actually, broadly, if we create a three-horse race, then the economic construct of the industry will be better for handset manufacturers and for operators. The worst possible thing is one party having a very strong share and having the ability to suck the value out of the ecosystem for whatever they choose to do with it, which is clearly what could or would happen if Android becomes the answer other than Apple.
I just wanted to confirm, since you keep on describing a three-horse race, does that mean you believe RIM is dead?
No, RIM, I mean, they're selling a lot of phones, they have, you know, some innovative designs and all of that, and we respect them, there's no question. I think what you're really hearing from me is, you know, you called it it's really a software game. I'm going to broaden that. I'm not disagreeing with you at all, actually. And you know, hardware and everything's important. I really believe, it's fundamental belief, that it is an ecosystem game. That unless I can show to the consumer ultimately hardware and an operating system and a user experience, and advertising, location, social, unified communications, productivity, you know, on and on. Like there's you know, a whole range of capability that needs to be delivered. And for those of you who have different competitive devices parked conveniently in front of me.
Really sorry, we're recording you. I just didn't.
you recognize that it's a much broader play. And so when I think about the ecosystems that either do or will exist, I can see three clearly. I do not yet have visibility into what the BlackBerry ecosystem looks like. And I think it'll be interesting to see how other companies respond, you know, to this. Again, back to that big chess game, you know, does someone like RIM say, like, RIM needs search, RIM needs advertising, RIM, you know, they have the same choices we did. They can build it all themselves, they can get it from Google, or they can get it from Microsoft. And that's a gross generalization because obviously in some countries like China, you don't get it from either Microsoft or Google, you get it from Baidu or, you know, like, so everyone's got to make those decisions of build versus buy. And, you know, they're facing the same decisions we are, you know, as it relates to that. And there are different answers to that. They could say, hey, we're going to be, you know, a great front end on a Google back end or on a Microsoft back end or whatever.
So, when you came to Nokia, did you ever own a Nokia?
Oh, yes. Yes. Absolutely.
You were familiar with the interface?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm going to allow.
So I had an earlier Symbian device at one period of time, and I'm sorry, I forget the model number, but I'll be honest with you. No.
Was it your first phone? My first phone.
No, that's just where I was going. My first phone, and this is, you know, after I got out of the, you know, it's attached to my car, but something I could carry around conveniently. was, and again, I forget the model number, but it was a classic candy bar Nokia phone. And I knew, just like every one of you did, you know, subject to age restrictions, being at the point where I knew precisely what numbers to enter to move through a beautiful user interface in the context of that time. I knew how to do that. You know, my thumb was trained. Just like I still know the full text editing in a VT100 on a VAX system. Like, you just, there's certain things you remember for your whole life, and that's true on the old Nokia. No, I did have an early Nokia Series 60 smartphone at one point. I forget which one, but I did. But clearly, when I was working at Microsoft, I wasn't carrying a Nokia device. I was carrying, you know, an early prototype of a Windows phone device.
Nokia said for years that Nokia is going to do better in North America. Nokia said for years that Nokia is going to do better in North America. And I feel like we've been hearing this over and over again. To the point of kind of, why could we believe you this time? The platform is a big deal, of course.
Yes.
But also, you know, it's been said and studied enough times that Nokia's relationships with U.S. carriers are just so broken and so almost antagonistic in some situations that it's just difficult all over. How do you fix that situation?
So I'm going to challenge the premise of your question. The second part of your question was that relationships with the U.S. carriers are so bad and so antagonistic. Not true at all. Not true at all. So throughout this consultation process, I met or spoke with multiple times the top leaders of both AT&T and Verizon, also T-Mobile. You know, that is not the issue. We have an obligation to put competitive products into the marketplace. So just as an example, you saw the story, you know, rumored and then confirmed. We had a Symbian device that cooperatively we had worked with the AT&T folks, moved it through the lab successfully, and there was a place for it on the store shelves for us. They did not think it was competitive relative to iPhone and Google, so broadly the Android family of devices. And so, you know, the indication from them was, you're not going to get a lot of love. You know, we've worked with you successfully, but you're not going to get a lot of love because we don't think it's competitive. Sorry. And so we face the decision, do we plow a bunch of money behind it, or do we say, you know what, we've got to evolve our strategy.
You said you've been talking to Verizon. Does that mean that you're considering getting back into the CDMA?
Obviously, they're a big player in that marketplace. We don't have a specific plan to announce, but Verizon is a very large player in the U.S. market.
If we could go back to software for a minute. A lot of these Android carriers, you can see they're trying to create differentiation with these skins and UI overlays. And I think you had mentioned that you don't really have plans to customize the Windows 7 interface. So how are you going to differentiate yourself from, say, you know, a Windows 7 set from HTC, Samsung?
So what I said about what we would or wouldn't do ourselves with the user interface is we would be thoughtful not to create an arbitrary forking or splitting of the user experience. Because if we could do something radically different on top of Windows Phone, we could skin it really differently. But then if someone builds an application and it doesn't work well within the context of our Windows phones versus other Windows phones, then that's a bit of a problem. So we have to be thoughtful about it. We can do what we need to do, but we'll be very thoughtful. Differentiation, you use the word skin. And it's the right word, because that's what's going on with Android. That's what has been going on with Windows Phone. You know, I've got Windows Phone from, you know, all of the different providers, and you look at every one of them, and HTC has a hub, and Samsung has a this, and someone else has a that, and they're skins. I mean, you know, you look at, actually, someone in the earlier meeting had one of these devices, and they had a skin on it, and so they've changed it a little bit, but still, they really haven't done much. That's not differentiation. You know, at the end of the day, that's not much. And in the Google ecosystem, our sense is that Google is going to move to tighten the degree to which people can even do that.
So you don't think HTC's sense is a differentiating factor? Or?
I think it's a little bit differentiating now, but I think it has to go deeper. So the example I've been using is photography and the camera capabilities and the software that we have. There's an example where if you have a Nokia Windows phone device that had that built in, and you were someone interested in that type of capability, we could show an experience that's far richer and complete than what anyone else has. That's a more important element of differentiation. Another might be...
It sounds like you're leveraging more of the hardware aspect.
Yes, and also on the services side, you know, take that photography, take concepts like augmented reality driven by photography, take local-based advertising where, hey, I'm looking at a pizza, oh, look, there's an ad saying, you know, if I buy a pizza in the next hour, I save 5% or, you know, whatever, it shows pizza. You know, so combining location-based services, local advertising, photography, you know, augmented reality, there are entire experiences that we can build that are differentiated. We have that engineering capability. We do that
without
work.
Without it making it look different. Because I think that's...
You see, it has to be in the framework of Windows Phone. Because if we go radically different, then...
people don't know what it looks like.
Exactly.
Will everyone have access to these? So there was talk about AviMax maybe coming in with Bing.
Yeah.
If you guys do something like that, is that something you'll make available to all Windows Phone manufacturers? Or are there going to be some Nokia-exclusive...
There will be some Nokia-exclusive differentiated capabilities that we built for Nokia's devices. At the same time, you mentioned Maps. Maps and those contributions as part of the Windows Phone experience will be broadly available to all. Important point, and I've said this in a couple of forums, but our most important competitor is not Samsung, and it's not HTC, and it's not Dell with their phone or whomever else. Our most important competitor is Android and Google. It's really important. So as we entered into this discussion with Microsoft, it was very much, what can we do to complete and strengthen the ecosystem? What can we do to do that? Now, the assuming success in the ecosystem, success will attract more competition within the ecosystem, and then if we're really successful, we'll end up being more concerned about competition within Windows Phone than, you know, relative to Android. But the battle to fight, first and foremost, is Android.
When you're talking about the camera capabilities, for instance, the built-in Windows Phone camera app takes forever and a day to start up, and that's not a Nokia experience. Would you go so far as to improve that app for fast startup, and if so, would that become part of the core Windows Phone platform?
Yeah, it certainly could. That would be an example of something we could contribute, but still decide to differentiate on top of. Don't use that as an ELOP says they will contribute blah blah blah. I'm using it as an example. So just pardon me. We could do that. And again, you know, if there are certain things that are very valuable to the platform overall, then those are things that will contribute. At the same time, we'll preserve that right to differentiate ourselves. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'll give you one very real example, and it relates to this question about the user interface and things like that. Nokia historically had the capacity, and it turned out to be advantageous, to do a remarkable amount of very precise cost engineering, hardware precision. Our chips are just a little bit different than the standard chip run, like all of this stuff at massive scale. But in this world, some of that's still advantageous, a lot of it slows you down. So when I give an answer like, yes, we could skin the user interface, yeah, and we could delay the release of our first phone by, you know, 3 weeks as a result, is that a trade-off we're willing to make? Clearly the pressure is on in terms of time to market, you know, building this ecosystem and things like that. So the message is very clear with the Nokia. If we're going to make changes that are special for Nokia, they better be absolutely the right things to do. And I'll give you an analogy here from this software industry. When SAP first started shipping their manufacturing systems en masse, there was a whole wave of companies implementing these things. And we all heard the story. SAP took years to implement and massive amounts of customization and things like that. And that's normal in the first wave of a technology era. But of course, what happened is best practices emerged.
Nokia said for years that Nokia is going to do better in North America. And I feel like we've been hearing this over and over and over and over again. To the point of kind of why could we believe you this time? The platform is a big deal, of course.
Yes.
But also, you know, it's been said and studied enough times that Nokia's relationships with U.S. carriers are just so broken and so almost antagonistic in some situations.
Yeah.
That it's just difficult all over. How do you fix that?
So I'm going to challenge the premise of your question. The second part of your question was that relationships with the U.S. carriers are so bad and so antagonistic. Not true at all.
Really? Okay.
Not true at all. So throughout this consultation process, I met or spoke with multiple times the top leaders of both AT&T and Verizon, also T-Mobile. You know, that is not the issue. we have an obligation to put competitive products into the marketplace. So just as an example, you saw the story, you know, rumored and then confirmed. We had a Symbian device that cooperatively we had worked with the AT&T folks, moved it through the lab successfully, and there was a place for it on the store shelves for us. They did not think it was competitive relative to iPhone and Google, so broadly the Android family of devices. And so, you know, the indication from them was, you're not going to get a lot of love. You know, we've worked with you successfully, but you're not going to get a lot of love because we don't think it's competitive. Sorry. And so we face the decision, do we plow a bunch of money behind it, or do we say, you know what, we've got to evolve our strategy. Obviously, they're a big player in that marketplace. We don't have a specific plan to announce, but Verizon is a very large player in the U.S. market.
If we could go back to software for a minute, a lot of these Android carriers, you can see they're trying to create differentiation with these skins and UI overlays, and I think you had mentioned that you don't really have plans to customize the Windows 7 interface. So how are you going to differentiate yourself from, say, you know, a Windows 7 set from HTC, Samsung?
So what I said about what we would or wouldn't do ourselves with the user interface is we would be thoughtful not to create an arbitrary forking or splitting of the user experience. Because if we could do something radically different on top of Windows Phone, we could skin it really differently. But then if someone builds an application and it doesn't work well within the context of our Windows phones versus other Windows phones, then that's a bit of a problem. So we have to be thoughtful about it. We can do what we need to do, but we'll be very thoughtful. Differentiation, you use the word skin. And it's the right word, because that's what's going on with Android. That's what has been going on with Windows Phone. You know, I've got Windows Phone from, you know, all of the different providers, and you look at every one of them, and HTC has a hub, and Samsung has a this, and someone else has a that. And they're skins. I mean, you know, you look at, actually, someone in the earlier meeting had one of these devices, and they had a skin on it. And so they've changed it a little bit, but still, they really haven't done much. That's not differentiation. You know, at the end of the day, that's not much. And in the Google ecosystem, our sense is that Google is going to move to tighten the degree to which people can even do that.
So you don't think HTC Sense is a differentiating factor? Or?
I think it's a little bit differentiating now, but I think it has to go deeper. So the example I've been using is photography and the camera capabilities and the software that we have. There's an example where if you have a Nokia Windows phone device that had that built in, and you were someone interested in that type of capability, we could show an experience that's far richer and complete than what anyone else has. That's a more important element of differentiation. Another might be...
It sounds like you're leveraging more of the
hardware aspect of it. Yes, and also on the services side, you know, take that photography, take concepts like augmented reality driven by photography, take local-based advertising where, hey, I'm looking at a pizza, oh, look, there's an ad saying, you know, if I buy a pizza in the next hour, I save 5% or, you know, whatever, it shows pizza. You know, so combining location-based services, local advertising, photography, you know, augmented reality, there are entire experiences that we can build that are differentiated. We have that engineering capability. We do that
without
work.
Without it making it look different.
It has to be in the framework of Windows Phone. Because if we go radically different, then
people don't know what it looks like.
Exactly.
Will everyone have access to these? So there was talk about Avimaps maybe coming in with Bing.
Yeah.
If you guys do something like that, is that something you'll make available to all Windows Phone manufacturers, or are there going to be some Nokia exclusive?
There will be some Nokia exclusive differentiated capabilities that we build for Nokia's devices. At the same time, you mentioned Maps. Maps and those contributions as part of the Windows Phone experience will be broadly available to all. Important point, and I've said this in a couple of forums, but our most important competitor is not Samsung, and it's not HTC, and it's not Dell with their phone or whomever else. Our most important competitor is Android and Google. It's really important. So as we entered into this discussion with Microsoft, it was very much, what can we do to complete and strengthen the ecosystem? What can we do to do that? Now, assuming success in the ecosystem, success will attract more competition within the ecosystem, and then if we're really successful, we'll end up being more concerned about competition within Windows Phone than, you know, relative to Android. But the battle to fight, first and foremost, is Android.
When you're talking about the capabilities, for instance, the built-in Windows Phone camera app takes forever and a day to start up, and that's not a Nokia experience.
experience. Mm-hmm. Would you go so far as to include that app for fast startup? And if so, would that become part of the core Windows Phone platform?
Yeah, it certainly could. That would be an example of something we could contribute, but still decide to differentiate on top of. Don't use that as an ELOP says they will contribute blah blah blah. I'm using it as an example. So just pardon me.
Could.
I mean they could. We could do that. And again, you know, if there are certain things that are very valuable to the platform overall, then those are things that will contribute. At the same time, we'll preserve that right to differentiate ourselves. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'll give you one very real example, and it relates to this question about the user interface and things like that. Nokia historically had the capacity, and it turned out to be advantageous, to do a remarkable amount of very precise cost engineering, hardware precision. Our chips are just a little bit different than the standard chip run, like all of this stuff at massive scale. But in this world, some of that's still advantageous, a lot of it slows you down. So when I give an answer like, yes, we could skin the user interface, yeah, and we could delay the release of our first phone by, you know, 3 weeks as a result, is that a trade-off we're willing to make? Clearly the pressure is on in terms of time to market, you know, building this ecosystem and things like that. So the message is very clear with the Nokia. If we're going to make changes that are special for Nokia, they better be absolutely the right things to do. And I'll give you an analogy here from the software industry. When SAP first started shipping their manufacturing systems en masse, there was a whole wave of companies implementing these things. And we all heard the story. SAP took years to implement and massive amounts of customization and things like that. And that's normal in the first wave of a technology era. But of course what happened is best practices emerged,